Throughout 2026, we will recognize, 100 years of this iconic highway that has profoundly shaped the culture and communities of Illinois and, of course, of places all across this nation. We've planned an incredible series of educational and commemorative events, classic car festivals, drone shows, movie screenings, block parties, and so much more, all throughout the state of Illinois. And of course, there are other states celebrating, but we do it better than anybody else.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Sheehan, host of Enjoy Illinois, Let's Go. That was J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, encouraging folks to get out and explore Route 66 during this centennial year. And I could not agree more, which is why we created this special episode. Our first guest helped curate the Miles of Memories exhibit at the Illinois State Museum, a look back on 100 years of Route 66 that includes audio recordings from across the state that go back decades. We'll follow that by chatting with the third generation owner of the Cozy Dog Drive-In, a classic Springfield stop on Route 66 that serves some delicious old school treats, along with a healthy dose of nostalgia. Are you ready to join me on this drive down memory lane? Let's go. Somewhere in Illinois, maybe it's someone at a diner with a neon sign that's been blinking since Eisenhower was president. Someone remembers exactly what Route 66 felt like during its heyday. Today, those voices are at the center of one of the most remarkable centennial efforts in the state, the Route 66 Oral History Project, a collection of 100 video-recorded interviews gathered by historians at the Illinois State Museum in Springfield. Today, we're joined by Amanda Bryden, one of the project's lead researchers. She spent years tracking down the people who lived, worked, and traveled this road across the decades. Amanda, welcome to Enjoy Illinois. Let's go.
Thank you, Katie. Really appreciate being here.
You can feel the buzz building for the Route 66 Centennial. Can you tell us what the Route 66 Oral History Project is?
Yes. So at the Illinois State Museum, we interviewed 100 people who lived, worked, and traveled Route 66 during the heyday, which we are defining as the pre-interstate days. And the interviews are available on the State Museum's website, which is www.illinoisstatemuseum.gov.
So your team conducted 100 interviews for this project. 100. Was that just you alone?
I'm the Registrar of History at the Illinois State Museum, and my colleague, Erica Holst, she is the curator of history. The two of us were the ones who sourced the vast majority of the interviews and conducted all 100. So we split it down the middle 50-50.
And it's a wide range of people, it seems, that you interviewed. Can you give us a range of all the different people you've interviewed?
Boy, we interviewed everyone from a retired state trooper who patrolled the road at night to truck drivers, to people who worked in restaurants, motels, to people who traveled Route 66 as kids on family vacations. So really the whole gamut.
Okay. Now, why did you choose this format? And what do you think oral history is the ideal way to honor something like Route 66?
So we wanted to capture people's memories and experiences, their firsthand memories and experiences. In order to do that, we decided to do the format in a way that would allow audio and visual. And we thought that was neat because, for one, you're literally listening to the people speaking in their own words. And so, the emotions that it brings out, that I think adds to the story.
So when you walk into the museum for the exhibit, do you put on headphones or can you listen, just press a button and listen right there at each stop?
Yeah, so we'll have listening stations spread throughout the exhibit. And so they're kind of going to be grouped together based on topic. The clips are not too long, maybe 30 seconds to 1 minute, but we really comb through all 100 interviews, which altogether as an aggregate runs 75 hours. So 75 hours worth of listening if you want to go on our website and listen.
Why do you think that Route 66 should matter to everyone?
That's a good question. So I think that it was just a very special road from the get-go. If you kind of look back at how it originated, just even the way it was marketed as like the most efficient, fastest way to get from Chicago to California, like specifically like LA, Santa Monica. But it was also advertised as like a community, like even back then, of just like links from like big cities to small cities, small cities to other small cities. And it really kind of focused on like the people along 66. And I think that that's kind of like a through line that started way back then, like even in the 20s. And then, of course, with popular culture, and John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath, talking about the Joad family, a moving Dust Bowl from Oklahoma to out west, to Bobby Troup's Route 66 song, to the TV show in the 1960s, to Cars, the movie, Pixar 2006. So you just have like seems like every decade or two, there's like something 66 that pops up that keeps it alive, keeps it in the front of people's minds. And so I think a lot of it though is like popular culture, but again, just like the people have always been very important on it, whether they were like living, traveling, working the road. So and I think that is kind of evident if you listen to some of our interviews. Like I think that kind of comes through, which I think is pretty cool.
Of the 100 interviews you did, do you have a favorite?
Oh, that is so hard. That's a good question. So I have a few that come to mind. One of them is actually the very last interview that I conducted, and it was with a retired state police trooper. And so it was really interesting to hear his perspective of just how road safety has changed. Of course, he had some pretty cool stories about some like gnarly stuff that happened along the road. Nothing graphic. And so we talked about that and just kind of the evolution of road safety. But then also he was very philosophical at one point where he was talking about the people and how just even kind of human nature changed a little bit based on the road and how it was very much before the interstate was built. It just people tended to help one another more. They felt more comfortable doing that. And then just with when the interstate came in, like it was just a bigger deal. It was set up differently and people traveled it differently. And so that changed actually the behavior of people as well. And that was really interesting to me. Like I hadn't really thought of 66 in that way. So that was a really good one.
So I want to show you a clip that brought a smile to my face.
We had to wear a particular uniform that had Amoco on it, and it was very nice. And when a car came in, we were obviously required to clean all the windshields, both front and back. If we had time, check the air in the tires. If we had time, lift up the hood, check the oil. We had a big rack of every map of the United States, and you could have a free map of any state you wanted.
So it seems like customer service norms have shifted a bit over time, wouldn't you say?
I would say so, yes. And just even about the uniform, like that's really interesting now. I think a lot of places, like you probably would have to buy your own, but that it was like furnished and it was like nice and white. So even just like the presentation of what people were wearing, and it was very branded, of course. But yes, and then the customer service of just rolling right in with your car, and this right away, a person or two would tend to your needs with your car.
All right, here's another clip that stood out to me. It shows a little bit of a different side of America's past.
When traveling back then, it was not always safe for us to stop along the way. Not only was it not only safe for us to stop, some places wouldn't allow us to stop. So what most Black families have done or did was we have this thing called shoebox chicken. And the mothers, the women in the family, we would always, first of all, we would always travel at night for one or two reasons. First of all, it was safer. And then not a lot of the cars had air conditioning. It was always cooler if you travel at night. And because we couldn't stop at certain places to eat, the mothers and the women would fix this meal, which is called shoebox chicken. And so we would take a shoebox and you would line it with aluminum foil. And the mothers would fry up chicken, and in this would have chicken, you would have pound cake, you would have an apple, and you would have cheese and crackers, and you always had a red pop. And that would be our meal from Springfield to St. Louis.
Yeah, couldn't stop at certain places. Black travelers certainly had a different experience of Route 66 back then. Did you hear similar stories from others?
We did, yes. Just talking about how at the time, the people that we interviewed, of course, they're adults now, but they're looking back because their stories are from when they were children. And so so the stories are kind of through a child's eyes, if you will. And so a lot of them mentioned that at the time they didn't really like pick up on really what was happening. Like their parents were definitely like shielding them from the realities of segregation and Jim Crow. But that was just what they did in order to like navigate the road. So maybe they didn't stop at certain places, or maybe they did stop at certain places, you know, depending on the Green Book, or maybe they heard word of mouth or through another motorist book besides Green Book. But yeah, it was very strategic in the way that Black families had and Black travelers had to navigate or had to work the road. It was very strategic.
All right. I want to switch things up a bit. My goal is to encourage people to plan a Route 66 themed trip to Illinois or cross Illinois. Can listeners go online and get inspired by these oral history interviews that you guys did?
I sure hope so. I think it's always cool to go and see places. Like for instance, go to the Dixie truck stop in McLean. That's a lot of fun. As well as I'm a restaurant person. So like the Ariston restaurant in Litchfield, it's been around for 100 years. So that's pretty neat. You can go to the Skyview drive-in there in Litchfield and see a movie along the road, as well as like visiting the ketchup bottle in Collinsville. Like that's a really neat landmark. So the Gemini Giant up in Wilmington. Like there's just so many different places that it's just a lot of fun. A lot of them are roadside attractions where maybe just off the beaten path a little bit, you know, and go out and kind of take some selfies and check it out, or sit down and, you know, eat a meal somewhere. There's definitely a lot of stuff still to do.
I love the Giants, especially because you pull over and it's like they're right there a lot of times, and it just is kind of breathtaking. You see them, you're like, whoa, that is so cool. And many of them are original to the old days, and, you know, some have been restored, or they symbolize, you know, what existed back then now. But those are kind of my favorites to see. Okay, now I'm very curious, because you've spent so much time on Route 66 talking to all kinds of different people. Where would you send visitors along Route 66?
There's different museums like that have Route 66 exhibits that are along Route 66 in Illinois. So there's the one up in Pontiac, which is probably the largest one and probably the best known, but Litchfield has one as well. And then there are other places that you can stop at that, like Edwardsville has a service station that they have converted into a museum talking about Route 66. And there's some other places in Odell and Dwight where they've done the same thing with their service stations. Lincoln has the Mill, which is a restaurant that is now a museum. So I think it really just depends on like what you're looking for. If you're looking for more, I wouldn't say formal, but if you're more of a museum type of setting, like indoors, and have the artifacts from different places there, like there's definitely those elements. But then I think it's just really important just to like travel the road. And if you can, just kind of just take it as it comes. I anticipate that I think a lot of the fun way to travel Route 66 is, I think, just kind of having maybe a loose itinerary, and then just like on a whim, if you see a billboard or a sign or something, it's like, hey, I never even knew that that was there. Why don't I just make a beeline? And, you know, even if it's like 10 or 15 minutes, go check it out. Like, why not? I think part of the fun is the adventure.
Well, this seems like a good time for me to give a shameless plug to our Illinois tourism website, enjoyillinois.com, where we have lots of different Route 66 trip ideas, trip inspiration. So visit that site to get some ideas and to get your plan for your trip in the works. Amanda, this has been such a remarkable conversation, and what a gift to Illinois history and to anybody who's ever felt the pull of that open road. Thank you so much for joining us on Enjoy Illinois. Let's go. It's been awesome.
Thanks, Katie. Really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun.
He grew up behind the counter of one of Route 66's most beloved institutions, wiping down tables as a kid, learning the rhythms and flow of the kitchen, and eventually stepping up to carry on a legacy his grandfather built from scratch in the years right after World War II. Today, Josh Waldmeier is the third generation to run the Cozy Dog Drive-In in Springfield. As Route 66 marks its centennial year, there's no better time to sit down with someone who has spent decades helping make the road a special place. Josh, welcome to Enjoy Illinois. Let's go.
How's everybody doing today?
So I got to tell you, you know, I'm a Springfield girl. I've eaten a lot of Cozy Dogs in my life. But for listeners who've never been to Cozy Dog Drive-In, can you set the scene? What is it like there?
Yeah, Cozy Dog, it's a old-style family restaurant that started back in the late 40s. And we serve an American-style menu, which has got burgers, fries, grilled cheese, of course, our famous Cozy Dog, homemade chili, bean soup. We got a full breakfast menu also. It's just that good old American kind of food that everybody enjoys.
And there's lots of nostalgic stuff all around the inside of Cozy Dog Drive-In. It kind of feels like you're stepping back in time, very cheerful, memory lane.
Yeah, our restaurant's kind of set up as an old school restaurant. The decor, it's not something that anybody would be accustomed to seeing today. So if you're not familiar with the Cozy Dog, it would definitely be a shock coming in because there's not many restaurants out there like ours. It's kind of like eating in a museum, to be honest.
That is very true. There's so much charm and character, and it's always fun to go there, in my opinion. So your grandfather, Ed Waldmeier, founded Cozy Dog right after getting out of the military in 1946. What do you know about why he started it, and what was his plan at the time?
While he was in the military, he saw a corn dog being baked somewhere, and in his mind, it took too long. So he mentioned to his friend, his father's Don Strand, who was a baker, said, could you maybe come up with a batter that would stick to a hot dog that could be immersed in cooking oil? And they experimented with it back and forth till they got the seasoning correct. And Grandpa actually tested it on the GIs in the mess hall. So the military and his fellow comrades were the first people to actually enjoy a Cozy Dog and were the guinea pigs of it.
I'm sure they loved it too.
Well, they did.
Nice. And that was that all in Springfield, or where did it start?
It all started in the Springfield area. He first served them at the Springfield Beach House in 1946. And then the following years, he had, I believe it was at least 2 to 3 stands. I call them cozy huts, where they were walk-up counter service spread out through Springfield. And then around 1950 is when he opened up the first restaurant on South 6th Street.
Well, that's an evolution I think everyone in Springfield and beyond is happy about. So I have to ask about the Cozy Dog itself, or is it a corn dog? What's the difference?
The corn dog is basically, it's a generic name. It's like calling a car a car. But a Cozy Dog, it's a specific to our own recipe. So we have our own flavoring, seasoning. It's not like any other corn dog out there. So when you come and get a Cozy Dog, you're not going to get that anywhere else unless they're buying our mix and making them themselves and selling them.
Is it for sale in the restaurant?
It sure is. I sell it in 5-pound bags so people can take it home and make them themselves.
Now, is this right that your grandfather created the tool used to dip the dogs in batter and cook them? I think I saw a video of that on your website.
That is correct. We call them the Cozy Racks, and he did invent this. He first started with clothespins on some kind of steel or contraption or whatnot, and he had a whole bunch of different versions of it. He had some spring-loaded ones, and he had ones that held up to 6 Cozy Dogs at one time, and eventually we ended up selling on a rack that holds 3 dogs.
So you're still using the same tool today?
Yep, still using the same ones my grandfather used.
Okay, so you grew up in this restaurant, literally. What are your earliest memories of being there as a kid?
Oh, they had us starting at 6 and 7 years old. We didn't have a self-service soda fountain back then. So that was the kids' jobs, to stand up front and refill the sodas and get the 10-cent refill charge and do all that thing and then go to the back and clean the trays and wipe them down to make sure we had clean trays. All the little, you know, I'd like to call them piddly jobs. That's what the kids got assigned.
So then at what age did you start to see yourself as, hey, I might be the guy that's going to be running the show here?
Oh, that was actually going to be later in my life, if I'm be completely honest with you. I worked at through Cozy Dog through high school, and I left right after I graduated and went out to the private sector. And let's see here. I didn't come back for probably 5-6 years, and my mom had taken over, and I decided that I'd come back and help her and just see how it felt, see if it'd activate that family business where I'd want to do it. And it turns out it did. So I ended up staying and started working full time and kind of slowly elbowed my mom a little bit, trying to tell, hey, you know, you can start to retire now. And she finally got the hint, you know, and I took over and we're still going today.
Let's talk about the food, because I know some people may think that Cozy Dog is just corn dogs, and that's not everything that's on the menu. You've talked about that a little bit, but what's the whole story? I know you talked a bit about the breakfast menu, and you're open for dinner too.
Yeah, we're open from 8 to 8, Monday through Saturday. We're closed on Sundays. Try to get one little day of rest, but yeah, I mean, we try to use all fresh products. We try not to get frozen stuff. Like I mentioned earlier, our French fries, we hand cut them every day. They're not frozen. They're not processed. We order in fresh whole potatoes, come in 50-pound bags or boxes, and we hand cut them every morning. Same thing with our hamburgers. We order in fresh raw meat, ball it up by hand, and we actually mash it on the grill. It's not frozen. It's almost as fresh as you can get, to be honest. And we're still using my grandfather's homemade chili recipe, homemade bean soup. I actually have added a cheese on a stick, and I've actually created a white American cheese sauce using our Cozy Dog ingredients. So we have our own Cozy Dog cheese sauce that's homemade. The best thing I can say is we try to keep it old school. Our kitchen's right in front. When you walk up, we're cooking the food right in front of you. We're not hiding in the back doing anything. And
the menu's on the wall right by where you line up. And
yeah, it's so funny. People come in now, they can't find our menu because they're used to these TV screens and stuff. And it's like, oh, I got this 12-foot menu back here, guys. It's right here. Just look up.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of going there to Cozy Dog last weekend with my grandma, mom, dad. We got 4 Cozy Dogs and we got 2 orders of fries. The fries are incredible. I mean, the value of eating there was incredible. I think it was only like $30 for everything we got because we had got some drinks too. So, I mean, you can't beat that.
I do my best to keep those prices as low as I can. And I do hear that quite often that everyone says that it's very affordable.
So I've got to ask, is there an officially sanctioned way to eat a Cozy Dog? You know, I've been told the right way is like mustard only. I've heard some people say you have to dip it, not spread it. I mean, I've had others say you cannot use a fork and knife. You're going to get in trouble for that. So you're like the corn dog authority. So you better tell us what's up.
I'll tell you, you can eat it any way you want. I'm a ketchup person. I'd never been mustard. And then you get the mustard people that hate ketchup people.
Yeah, so, I know.
Yeah, and they get serious. They're like, oh, no. But I can tell you this, and I don't want to, like, kick the mustard people down when they're down, but I saw a lot more ketchup than I do mustard. So I would say ketchup's probably the biggest winner. I eat it right off the stick, no fork and knife. If you want to fancy it up, I guess you could use a fork and knife and do some fine dining with your corn dog, but it's not necessary. They're made to eat on the run. You carry them around, you run.
Okay, thank you. The voice of authority on Cozy Dog has spoken here. Appreciate that. All right, so tell us about the hidden stamp on the Cozy Dog stick. I don't know about this, but I think it's a tradition that people want to know about.
Yes, actually, this was something that my grandfather did not do. This was something my dad came up with in the 70s. So he came up with the idea. You know, remember how people used to get popsicle sticks and they'd have little jokes or sayings on them? So he's like, well, why don't I stamp free cozy on there, free cozy dog? And when you're eating it, oh, bring your stick up, you get another free dog. And that's all it is. It's just it's another fun way to make eating more fun and have a little contest. You know, everybody loves winning stuff. It makes you feel special and it just brings a smile to your face. And it's just our way to give back a little bit more and make Cozy Dog more special.
What about celebrities? Have any celebrities dropped into Cozy Dog over the years?
Oh yeah, we've had a Billy Connolly come through. He did a tour on a trike. Jane Lynch has come by, and they actually she filmed a commercial for the Enjoy Illinois at Cozy Dog. Yep.
Yep.
Chris Kattan, he's a local celebrity. Well, not local, but he lives here. That's what I mean by local. And he comes by and eats with his family, not in an official capacity, but he does come enjoy Cozy Dogs.
It's on his diet. Now the secret's
Yeah.
out.
Adam Richman from Man vs. Food. That was probably our first big launch into the TV programs. And that was a blast. That was my first actual TV interview, was the Adam Richman on Man vs. Food.
So as you know, Route 66 turns 100 this year. What does that mean for you personally, and what do you think it means for Cozy Dog?
I think it's amazing that the road has held this attention for that long. And I hope it does it for another 50 or even another 100 years. As for Cozy Dog, I think it's also a test to the testament of what businesses and when people put their effort into something, of how it can withstand the tests of time.
So I understand you're partnering with the city of Springfield during the Mo Mother Road Festival in September on something pretty spectacular.
We're partnered with Major League Eating, and we're going to have a first official Cozy Dog eating contest. And it's not an amateur. This is with the pros. So it's a big deal. I can't wait to cook up the 600 or 700 dogs I got to provide for them.
Yeah, and see them disappear in 10 minutes. That's
Yep.
awesome. Well, Josh Waldmeier, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been so much fun.
In case this podcast hasn't made it clear, this is the year to get out on Route 66. 2026 marks the 100th anniversary of the Mother Road, and communities across Illinois are celebrating in a big way. In June, Springfield hosts a centennial 5K at the state fairgrounds. September brings the world premiere of a new Route 66 documentary in Chicago. In October, Southwest Illinois celebrates the final stretch of the highway with the Last 100 Miles Festival, a region-wide party spanning multiple communities. And all year long, keep an eye out for statewide drone light shows marking the centennial from the sky. Get the full event calendar at enjoyillinois.com. Thanks for listening to Enjoy Illinois Let's Go, produced by the Illinois Office of Tourism. I'm your host, Katie Sheehan, and we hope to see you soon here in the land of Lincoln. You can find us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and pretty much anywhere you like to listen. When you're ready to start exploring, head to enjoyillinois.com, your one-stop shop for trip inspiration, destination guides, and much more.